Good evening. For WBAI News in New York, I'm Linda Perry with some of the news for Monday, September 18, 2017. As usual, New York City is a traffic nightmare with the UN General Assembly in progress, made worse still by the presence of Donald Trump in town. Today, he sat next to UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres in a meeting on reforming the international body. While Trump says the UN hasn't reached its full potential, he praised the body for working on reform. The U.S. pays 25% of the UN's regular operating budget and over 28% of the separate peacekeeping budget. It's a level of spending Trump has complained is unfair, but today he didn't threaten to withdraw support. This stands in sharp contrast to a speech before world leaders in Brussels outside NATO headquarters. That's where he called out members for not paying enough. Trump's speech today also stood in contrast to his campaign rhetoric, where he characterized the United Nations as weak and incompetent. Today he softened his tone, and he even called on the UN to support whistleblowers. Here's Trump.
On behalf of the co-host countries, I would like to also thank Secretary General Guterres for joining us, and we affirm our commitment to the United Nations reform, and reform is what we're talking about. I applaud the Secretary General for laying out a vision to reform the United Nations so that it better serves the people we all represent. We support your efforts to look across the entire system and to find ways the United Nations can better and be better at development, management, peace, and security. The United Nations was founded on truly noble goals. These include affirming the dignity and worth of the human person and striving for international peace. The United Nations has helped advance toward these goals in so many ways: feeding the hungry, providing disaster relief, and empowering women and girls in many societies all across the world. Yet in recent years, the United Nations has not reached its full potential because of bureaucracy and mismanagement. While the United Nations on a regular budget has increased by 140% and its staff has more than doubled since 2000, we are not seeing the results in line with this investment. But I know that under the Secretary General, that's changing, and it's changing fast, and we've seen it. That's why we commend the Secretary General and his call for the United Nations to focus more on people and less on bureaucracy. We seek a United Nations that regains the trust of the people around the world. In order to achieve this, the United Nations must hold every level of management accountable, protect whistleblowers, and focus on results rather than on process. To honor the people of our nations, we must ensure that no one and no member state shoulders a disproportionate share of the burden, and that's militarily or financially. We also ask that every peacekeeping mission have clearly defined goals and metrics for evaluating success. They deserve to see the value in the United Nations, and it is our job to show it to them. We encourage the Secretary General to fully use his authority to cut through the bureaucracy, reform outdated systems, and make firm decisions to advance the UN's core mission. Further, we encourage all member states to look at ways to take bold stands at the United Nations with an eye toward changing business as usual and not being beholden to ways of the past which were not working. Mr. Secretary General, the United States and the member states present today support this great reform vision. We pledge to be partners in your work, and I am confident that if we work together and champion truly bold reforms, the United Nations will emerge as a stronger, more effective, more just, and greater force for peace and harmony in the world. Thank you, Mr. Secretary General, and I look forward to advancing these shared goals in the years to come, and it is a great honor to be with you today. Thank you.
After Trump's speech, he and Secretary General Antonio Guterres shared a hearty handshake. Guterres says he shares Trump's vision for reform.
Mr. President, thank you very much for your engagement and your support. And I also thank Ambassador Haley for her leadership, her partnership, and her commitment. And I'm very grateful to all the leaders here today. Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, someone recently asked what keeps me up at night. And my answer was simple: bureaucracy. Fragmented structures, Byzantine procedures, and endless red tape. Someone out to undermine the UN could not have come up with a better way to do it than by imposing some of the rules we have created ourselves. I even sometimes ask myself whether there was a conspiracy to make our rules exactly what they need to be for us not to be effective. But above all, let us never forget that we are here to serve the people, people suffering in poverty or exclusion, people victimized by conflict, people whose rights and dignity are being denied, but also people with ideas and dreams who need a helping hand. Reform is for them. But reform is all for the hardworking taxpayers who underwrite all the crucial work we do. And reform is for everyone serving under the UN flag, all of whom deserve the conditions to do their vital job. To serve the people we support and the people who support us, we must be nimble and effective, flexible and efficient. And we must do so keenly aware of our obligation to live up to the values of the United Nations Charter. Together, we are making progress on a broad and bold reform agenda to strengthen the United Nations. We have launched a game-changing strategy to end sexual exploitation and abuse. We have embarked on plans to achieve gender parity in the UN, to protect whistleblowers, and strengthen counterterrorism structures. And we are reforming our peace and security architecture to ensure we are stronger in prevention, more agile in mediation, and more effective and cost-effective in peacekeeping operations. We are reforming our development system to become much more field-focused, well-coordinated, and accountable to better assist countries through the 2030 Agenda for Sustainable Development, our contribution to a fair globalization. And to underpin all these efforts, we are pursuing sweeping management reform to simplify procedures, to decentralize decisions with greater transparency, efficiency, and accountability. These efforts reinforce each other, and they are all grounded in overarching principles. We are a global organization. 90% of our personnel serve in the field, and we need to bring decision making closer to the people we serve. Trust and empower managers, reform cumbersome and costly budgetary procedures, and eliminate duplicative structures. Mr. President, you often have said, and you repeat it today, that the UN has tremendous potential. All of us have the responsibility to make sure we live up to it.
The Trump administration is said to be reviewing the UN 16 far-flung peacekeeping operations, which cost nearly $8 billion a year. Cutting their costs and making them more effective is a top priority for UN Ambassador Nikki Haley. Donald Trump's big day comes tomorrow. That's when he delivers his first address to the UN General Assembly. World leaders have expressed concern over Trump's America First policy and are waiting to see how this plays out. Meanwhile, the Associated Press reports that Trump's frequent questions about the value of diplomatic and military assets has led his top advisors to lay out the case this summer for a robust U.S. presence around the world. Top aides used charts and maps in a briefing this summer to try to persuade Trump to retain America's global footprint. The effort was part of a push to counter so-called nationalist forces in the White House. Defense Secretary James Mattis and Secretary of State Rex Tillerson organized the session to lay out the case for maintaining far-flung outposts. They used charts and they used maps in a way the businessman turned politician would appreciate. The results, or the lack of results, will be on display this week as Trump attends his first UN General Assembly. Meanwhile, as representatives of countries from around the world meet for the General Assembly, New Yorkers affected by temporary protective status, allies, and elected officials are rallying to ask the Trump administration for an extension of the legal permit to live and work in the U.S. The Trump administration has indicated that it plans to end the program, which would affect an estimated 435,000 people from 10 countries. This includes El Salvador, Haiti, and Nepal. Temporary protective status protects people from countries in the midst of natural disasters or civil war until they are able to return home, and it grants them legal permission to live and work in the U.S. Many people have lived here for decades under this status, working, buying homes, raising families, and starting businesses. Meanwhile, today, six DACA recipients in California sued the federal government over its plan to end DACA, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program. It was initiated by Barack Obama because of the logjam in Congress over immigration reform. So far, a coalition of 16 states' attorneys general, including New York's Eric Schneiderman, have sued the federal government over Trump's DACA decision. And this weekend, Governor Andrew Cuomo chimed in on the negotiations between Trump and Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer to save DACA, critical on their path forward. He spoke on John Katsimatidis' radio program.
As the president said to the Democrats, I'll give you what you already have, which is DACA. And in exchange, I want more money for border security with Mexico, which, John, is going to turn into a wall by the time he's finished. Now, look, first, for the president sent DACA to Congress for legislation. All the signs were that the Congress was going to pass it anyway. Why? Because there would be anarchy and it would be the ultimate injustice if they didn't. You're talking about 800,000 young people across the country. They've done absolutely nothing wrong. They're living by all the rules. They were never in the original country. They were brought here by their parents. 50,000 in New York. Do you really believe that Congress is going to vote to deport 800,000 young people across the country? I don't care what their bluster says.
These kids never knew any other country but the United States, and they should be grandfathered the rights of staying here, and it's the right thing to do. And by the way, this case came before Judge Garifuss, I understand, and he is a fair-minded, common-sense judge.
Oh, yeah. John, I have no doubt on the ultimate outcome. You would have lawsuits. If they ever tried to do it, you'd have states resisting, cities resisting. You'd have another civil war. So all the signs were they were going to pass DACA anyway. And now the president says, well, I want more money for border security, but I won't build the wall. Now, I guarantee you where this winds up is... Okay, I got more money for border security. We're putting in cameras. We're putting in sensors. We're putting in an electric grid that if anybody goes near the grid, it sounds an alarm. And then the president will say, I have a cyber wall, better than the wall that we were talking about, better than a fence. This is a new electronic highly sophisticated fence. This is a fence for 2020. That's where it's going to come out.
Andrew Cuomo on DACA this weekend. And you're listening to the news here on listener-sponsored non-commercial Pacifica Radio. This is WBAI in New York. Turning to North Korea, North Korea launched a missile over Japan on Friday as it protested against tough new UN sanctions over its sixth nuclear test on September 3rd. China's Communist Party newspaper, The People's Daily, is criticizing the U.S. for demanding Beijing put more pressure on North Korea to rein in its weapons program. It says Beijing will never accept responsibility imposed by the U.S. China accounts for about 90% of North Korea's trade. China's communist newspaper said sanctions should not interfere with legitimate trade between North Korea and the outside world or harm everyday people. Sanctions are not a tool for stifling the regime, it said. Later, Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson Liu Kang told reporters that some related parties, a reference to the U.S. and North Korea, keep sending threatening messages both in words and deeds that include warnings of military action. These kinds of actions don't help solve the problem, but further complicate the situation, he said. In other news, here in the U.S., there's been unrest in St. Louis. It followed the acquittal of a white former police officer in the fatal shooting of a black man, 24-year-old Anthony Lamar Smith. 4 days of protests came after Jason Stockley was cleared in the 2011 shooting, where he fired through an open car window and shot 5 times. The former officer said he believed Smith had a gun. A handgun was later found in the vehicle between the center console and the driver's seat, but the shooting came after a 3-minute high-speed car chase where Stockley told his partner to ram Smith's car, and Stockley was recorded during the chase as saying, "Going to kill this mother bleeper, don't you know it?" Another rally is planned for this evening in St. Louis. Turning to animal rights, you've seen the commercials. They speak out for animals in pain, being tortured. Images of animals forced to perform in circuses, raised in close quarters for food, or killed for clothing, or for sport. That's why a recent rally in March, Unite for Animals, was held across the country and here in New York City. Activists held signs which said, "Did your food have a face? Wear your own skin. Fur is dead. Stop killing animals. Meat is murder. Dairy is rape." Activists marched behind a huge banner which reads, "Go Vegan." Another sign, "Man's inhumanity to man is only surpassed by inhumanity to animals." "No compassion, no peace. How many animals have to die?" was another sign. T-shirts say, "Vegan Power." Activists wear anonymous masks. "Veganism is anti-fascism" is another sign. Sierra Malachone is an occupational therapist from Queens. She supports animal rights.
Well, we're hoping that people become more aware of the horrors of the meat industry. These animals are tortured, and there's no humane way to eat meat. There's the cages and pigs taken away, like the from their piglets. There's a lot of horrors behind this industry. So we're just trying to make people more aware of that. Foremost thing that people can do is go vegan, because doing that ensures that no animals will be harmed.
Joshua Katcher is a menswear designer in New York City. His brand is called Brave Gentle Man.
I'm here for the official Animal Rights March, which is an international march that's been coordinated throughout many major cities in the world. And everybody here has come together to take a stand for animals. Throughout the world, there are countless ways that animals are exploited and harmed, and it's just not necessary. And we want a better world. We want a more compassionate world. And we want a world that is focused on innovation and creativity and compassion, and these can all lead to a better society for everyone.
Katcher says traditional materials used in fashion are unnecessary.
In fashion, traditionally, the materials that are considered to be the most sought after are things like fur and leather and cashmere, and these are all animal materials, and animals in very large numbers suffer greatly to acquire these materials. And there are better materials out there. There are materials that are superior to leather, and that outperform wool, and that we don't need to be using animals' bodies to grow fibers. This is an archaic production model. It's inefficient. It's polluting. All of the most exciting innovations that are happening in food technology and materials technology are happening in the realm of vegan innovation. We are seeing materials being grown in the laboratory that will replace and make obsolete animal materials. We just don't need it anymore. It's cruel, it's outdated, and there's a far better way of doing things.
Ray Eppolito is the outreach director of the Catskill Animal Sanctuary.
There are countless billions and even trillions of lives that are at stake. So every year, up to 60 billion land animals and 2.7 trillion sea animals are slaughtered for food. That's just for food. Talk about all the other pets that we have and all the other animals that are used for fur and for entertainment. These are animals and beings, actually, in life that have the same exact feelings that we do, the same five senses, the same desire to be free of suffering, to be at peace, to be with their family and friends. And we all know that. Any of us who've ever had any type of a pet know that there is a communion that they wish to have with other beings. They really don't want that with us. They want that with their other beings. And the truth is that we keep producing and producing and producing animals and use them in ways that are 1,000% unnecessary. We do not need to be using animals for food, for clothing, for entertainment, absolutely nothing. But we do. It's a really crazy cycle that we're involved in. Most of us are born into this agreement that animals, you know, are here for our use. And they're no more here for our use than, you know, men are, or women are here for men, or people of color are here to be slaves, right? It's the same thing. So in the world, we know that there's a huge outcry against racism, a huge outcry against sexism, and we're here to have a huge impact and bring it to the forefront of speciesism. This is speciesism. We're saying that our species is better and has the right to do what we want when we want to do it just because we say.
Eppolito makes a plea to consider going vegan.
Especially for anyone who's listened in any type of a slightly elevated community like New York City or any kind of a city, there's endless resources and endless possibilities to eat beautiful, healthy food and to wear synthetic clothes and clothes that are made from things that are not made from animals. We can do it. It's necessary. It's important. And one last thing I'll say is, like, for all the environmentalists out there, right? If you really, 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 really do care about the environment, you'd go vegan. You'd go vegan because literally the number one cause of global greenhouse emissions is the animal livestock industry. Most of our water, most of our land is going towards the reproduction of animals. Desertification, deforestation, ocean dead zones, habitat destruction, all this is caused by animal livestock industry, and it's unnecessary and it keeps us sick.
John D. Leonardo is president of Long Island's Orchestrating for Nature, and he's assistant manager of Animals Entertainment at PETA. PETA is the People for Ethical Treatment of Animals. He encourages people to speak out for animals.
You know, it's sometimes as easy as you know, choosing a meat-free meat product. You get at Stop and Shop. You can get at Whole Foods. I mean, you can just help animals by slight changes to your diet. I mean, it's atrocious that people are still wearing fur in this day and age as well. I'm here wearing several mink caught in a trap. People think that mink are large animals, and you know there's only a few per coat. It takes 60 mink to make a single fur coat, 100 chinchilla to make a single fur coat, and these animals are beaten brutally. They're trapped. They may even gnaw off their legs trying to escape from traps to go back to their families. I mean, these are animals with families and individualities, with wants and cares of their own, and we need to start treating them like that and not treating them as products.
And that's some of the news for Monday, September 18th, 2017. The news was produced with Akeem Killick and Reggie Johnson. For WBAI News in New York, I'm Linda Perry.